Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Pandora's Box here on The Zine. This morning we're going to be talking about childhood obesity and obesity as a national catastrophe. Those were the words that were used by U.S. Surgeon General Stephen Galson recently. And at a gathering of experts earlier this month, the National Academy of Sciences esteemed Institute of Medicine reported that approximately 68% of all adults in this country aged 20 years or older and nearly 32% of all children in the U.S. are either overweight or obese. In our own state here in Colorado, we are one of three states in which childhood obesity has actually increased from 2008 to 2011 instead of plateauing, which it is starting to do in all the other states in the United States. So studies indicate, unfortunately, that because many obese children and adolescents will never overcome their overweight, up to 80% of obese teens become obese adults, experts fear an exponential increase in heart disease, strokes, and cancer, as well as other health problems as these children move into their 20s and beyond.
And one of the things in some of those studies that they've been talking about is that parents will outlive their children because of the rate of obesity in children.
For the first time in the history, the recorded history of the United States of America, and this statistic has been repeated in the media over and over.
So I think one of the most important things when talking about obesity is this this idea that obesity is because people are eating too much food. And really what studies have found is it's more about what you're eating, not how much you're eating. And an example of that is the book that was written by author Michael Moss, which is called Salt, Sugar, and Fat. And in that book, they talk about how the food industry, the food giants who make snack food, I won't call it junk food, I'll call it snack food, give them the benefit of the doubt, how they calculate the idea of a bliss point of a combination of sugar, fat, sugar, salt, and fat in order not to enhance the flavor of the food as much as addict us to the food. So we are continually being bombarded with all these foods that we are snacking on that are causing us to eat more of them because they're so addictive. And the trouble with that is that these companies are well aware of the problem of too much salt and too much sugar and too much fat in our diet, and it unfortunately doesn't stop them from continuing to perpetuate.
Another risk factor that's been identified as a large contributor to the obesity epidemic are chemicals called obesogens, or as they're now being called, diabesogens, dia for diabetes, beso for obesity, and gen for a chemical that causes or generates the problem. This list of chemicals studied as obesogens continues to grow and includes things like bisphenol A and phthalates, both chemicals found in plastics, organotins, which are little known about chemicals that are found in the industry that preserves the hulls of ocean-going vessels and also to prevent them from being covered with slime. They're called slimicides, actually, and wood preservatives. Organochlorine pesticides and chlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, which were taken out of commerce in the 70s because they cause cancer, but are commonly known as the chemicals that are causing problems in polar bears because they migrate northward. So these chemicals are known to cause weight gain. The problem is that as time goes on, more and more of these chemicals find themselves, or we find them, in the fat of Americans. And they also are found in growing fetuses. And one of the problems with a diabesogen or an obesogen is that it can alter the hormonal signaling and the chemical signaling in a growing fetus to actually lead to obesity later on in childhood or later on in life.
I just want to jump in here really quick, Lynn. You know, as a parent of two children myself, what I'm hearing you guys both say, you and Joni, is that really it's changes in the way our food is made and the way our food is preserved and shipped and these kinds of things that's really inserting a lot of these chemicals and things that are causing obesity and probably diabetes to some degree as well, I imagine. I'm just curious, do you feel like this is all more wrapped around the convenience movement in food or the longevity of shelf life and those kinds of things? Lynn, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I think a perfect example of that is how our food supply has changed since the 1970s. So in the mid-70s, a food additive, preservative, sweetener called high fructose corn syrup was added to the food supply. So we didn't even have this, I'm going to call it a chemical versus a sweetener, added to our food supply. But high fructose corn syrup, which actually acts in the body more like alcohol than it actually does like sugar, was added to beverages. And so now
It was cheaper.
Because it's cheaper, but also because it acts as a food preservative as well as a sweetener. So the average American drinks 50 gallons of soda or other sweetened beverages a year. And I want to just add to that you can't see Tom's face right now, but
my horrified expression.
Yes, he just had a horrified expression, but it's true. It's just a statistic, and for those of us that don't drink 50 gallons of soda a year, that means somebody else is drinking 100. So the problem with high fructose corn syrup is that we know there's direct relationship in studies between the amount of sugar sweetened beverages or soda that a person consumes and their risk of becoming obese or overweight. So every 20-ounce serving contains 17 teaspoons of sugar. That's a lot of sugar. We'll come back in a minute and talk more about that.
All right, you're listening to Pandora's Box on KSJD. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to this morning's edition of Pandora's Box here on The Zine. I'm Lynn Patrick with my co-host, Joni Trussell, and our producer, Tom Yoder. We're talking about the national catastrophe of obesity, particularly in children. And we're talking about high fructose corn syrup as something that is considered by the scientific community as a risk factor for obesity.
Lynn, I was just going to ask, you know, high fructose corn syrup is something that I know when we shop in my family, we look for that on the labels. And I know there are a lot of foods now that say no high fructose corn syrup in them, probably for a lot of the reasons. Are there other things that we should be looking as far as labeling on foods and that kind of thing that we should be looking out for?
To identify high fructose corn syrup or just as a sweetener?
In general, yeah, sweeteners maybe in general.
Yeah, dextrose is sometimes a benign term that's used to identify sugar, as well as cane syrup. Sometimes it's called organic cane syrup.
And that's not good.
No, it all has the same effect. Hmm. But high fructose corn syrup works a little differently on the liver and causes fatty liver disease. Now, the problem, though, with obesity is that if you drink one soda or sugar-sweetened beverage a day, it makes you 30% more likely to be obese, regardless of your ethnic background and regardless of your income level. So there's a myth that obesity is more of a problem in lower-income communities, but unfortunately that's changing now. And the Washington Post recently reported that in affluent Loudoun County, D.C., more than a third of 2 to 5-year-olds are overweight. So unfortunately this epidemic is crossing both ethnic lines and socioeconomic lines. But getting back to the high fructose corn syrup, we know now that 62% of all adolescents drink at least one soda or other sugar-sweetened beverage a day. And a child's chances of being obese increase by 60% with every additional serving of soda. So we're talking about servings of sugar-sweetened beverages or soda. And I'm going to include beverages like Snapple and Arizona iced tea, which we now know can contain up to 60 grams of sugar per serving. That was actually in a recent medical article in the journal Obesity. They actually looked at these beverages, and they found that they may include 20% more sugar than is on the label. That's okay as far as the FDA is concerned.
I actually had a question for you, Joni. You know, I think about all of these things that we have to look out for as we're shopping and looking at the foods that we're eating. But I'm wondering a little bit about some of the consequences on the family and in the house that obesity and diabetes can have. As you know, we all live busy lives and we try to do the best for our kids, but what are some of the other impacts that these kinds of health situations can have on the family?
Well, as someone who's worked a lot with eating disorders, because this is one of the things that comes out of how the family operates. So eating disorders are directly related to the family dynamics. They're not they're not about food, although they become about food. So I think that the correlation between food and how we relate to food in the family directly relates to how people use it in the future. So I guess I wanted to make sure to address this piece in particular, which is what a solution is around obesity. Is it starts with young children who are in school systems where the cafeterias are feeding food that is not necessarily helping them with their health issues, and that's part of the problem. Is that we're not addressing it in the schools. We're not thinking of the cafeteria as a training ground, and that also needs to happen at home, that we need to think about what we're feeding. I know that that everyone's busy and that it is about convenience, but the toll that we're taking on our children because of convenience food is that we are breeding obesity. And so the combination of what's happening with our solutions, which is one of the reasons that I wanted to talk on this show about obesity, was that there was a recent article in the Durango Herald which talked about a solution for obesity in teens is to do surgery, bariatric surgery or lap band surgery. And that's very disturbing to me because it feels like it literally is a Band-Aid on a bigger problem. And the bigger problem is what happens to our kids in the home, what happens to our kids in the schools, and the result of that. And that if we were more conscious about what our food intake looked like, if we thought about eating whole foods and eating plant-based foods, instead of thinking about, okay, well, now we have these really obese children, let's just fix it and give them do surgery, and not consider two levels of that. One is that surgery does not address the emotional problem that's going on for these kids, and that is so much a part of the problem, is that we eat as adults and as children for comfort.
And I just wanted to address this issue because it's highly contentious of doing lap band surgery in adolescents. In a recent Medscape, which is kind of the medical journal of doctors, only half of doctors were even willing to say that this is something that they agreed to. The other half said they would never allow it. They would never refer adolescents for lap band surgery because it's so dangerous. There's high risk in young people. And I think also because it doesn't address the source of the problem.
Well, and it sounds to me like really at the heart of this issue is our relationship with food in a lot of ways, that psychological relationship where it makes us feel better. And it almost has, I hate to say it, but it almost has kind of like drug-like qualities in some ways, where you're feeling bad and so you go eat the ice cream or whatever that you do. So it sounds like part of the solution is really to look at that a little bit more carefully.
Absolutely.
And I think there is something to be said for the drug-like effect of food. There was a recent article looking at the effect of high fructose corn syrup in animal models, and they found that there was an addictive quality to high fructose corn syrup, similar to alcohol, actually.
Wow. So it does act like a drug.
It's true.
All right. Well, I guess that's it. You guys have anything else you wanted to add today before we wrap up?
Just that I think probably the one very important solution that we can look to are things like the Farm to School program, and also any educational outreach to children about sugar-sweetened beverages is very important to support.
All right. Thank you both, Lynn and Joni, for the show today.
Thank you, Tom.
You've been listening to Pandora's Box on the Tuesday Morning Zine. Today's program was produced by Lynn Patrick, Joni Tressel, and myself, Tom Yoder, and our theme music was written and performed by Brett Peja.